Life insurers put life into the things you live for. The new factory that's hiring your neighbors. Maintenance on the bridge that keeps traffic flowing. The paycheck that puts pizza night on the table. Life insurers contribute $8 trillion to the U.S. economy through bond purchases and other investments. And protect the financial security of 90 million American families, like yours. See how life insurers put life into America at ACLI.com. Paid for by the American Council of Life Insurers.
Let's face it, football is a game of risks. Whether it's calling a trick play on your own five or bringing kale chips to a watch party. And while taking crazy chances like this occasionally may pay off, taking big unnecessary risks can mean real trouble, especially when you're gambling. So always know the odds and what you're getting into. Want more tips on how to keep gambling fun? Go to keepitfunohio.com, where you'll find interesting quizzes, fun games, and lots of effective ways to keep your gambling in check.
The Hard Shoulder with Kieran Cuddihy.
With the MG Hybrid and Electric range.
On News Talk.
Going to kick things off with these comments made by Anthony Horowitz, the author. He says that social media is impacting children's brains in such a way that their attention spans have deteriorated, and it means that the books he has written for children are now too long. He says they're too long. They would not read them if he was writing them again. He'd have to make them shorter. Lorraine Leavis is with me, author of Once Upon a Reader, Raising Your Children with a Love of Books, and head of sales for Bloomsbury in Ireland. Lorraine, do you think he's right? Have you seen this?
It's a bold statement. It's a bold statement. I'm a big fan of Anthony Horowitz, and back when I was a bookseller, his Alex Rider series was hugely popular. Mm. And it still continues to be. It still continues to be stocked in a lot of places. But those books came out a good few years ago now. And I do think he makes a very valid point about attention spans. But I do think there are plenty of longer books out there that are still being read.
Have ye seen, though, maybe patterns changing within the industry to reflect things like attention spans, but also just the kind of fragmented media market as well that kids are exposed to?
Absolutely. The market has changed completely. Like, you know, we're coming from a time where the likes of your Harry Potter's, your big fantasy long series, you know, when I was a kid, that was the be all and end all, and we would reread them. And mostly because, you know, our options were, you read your books, you go out and play, which is great. You play your sports. Or, when I was younger, video games started being a thing, and there was a huge moral panic about video games. And sure, that's warranted in some ways. But in the same way now, in the same way adults, we find it very difficult to pull ourselves away from our phones. I know I do. It's the same with kids, but they're just younger and more impressionable. And so it is absolutely reflected in the fact that we're seeing a huge amount of shorter books. Graphic novels are massive. Dog Man is the biggest thing now.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Dog Man. God almighty, in our house, it's big, all right.
And sure, whenever I was younger, Captain Underpants, his first series was huge. And now they're all back again, but now it's Dog Man too. And so it's just, yeah, things have changed. And it is definitely reflective of the way the world is.
Is there an element of snobbishness to all of this? And I'm not accusing Anthony Horowitz of this. I don't know what he thinks about Dog Man. But sometimes there's a tendency from some to look down their nose at a book like that. I kind of am of the view, if the kid is reading, I don't really care whether there's pictures or it's in a bubble over a dog's head.
Absolutely. And I think it's the same snobbishness, if we want to use that term, which could also be quite a strong word, that we see in adult literature as well. Because I read for work, whenever I read for pleasure, it's trash. I love just losing myself in a book. And you know what? If there aren't massively long words in it, I'm not going to be too fussed. It's the same with when I watch stuff on TV. I love a bit of Bridgerton. You know, I'm not going to come out a Nobel laureate having watched Bridgerton, but I've had a good time and I've relaxed and I've turned my brain off a little bit. And it's the same with kids and books. They will learn to read in school. They will read their class novels, and all of those skills will come from that. We are trying to get kids to read for pleasure, and pleasure has to be the optimum word.
In terms of sales figures, is there any indication that books are becoming less popular?
No, the book market is bigger than ever. Which is so exciting. And we had the same conversation when Kindles and Audible and everything came out as well, that, you know, oh, what's going to happen to the physical book? The physical book had a little bit of a wobble, but then it started plateauing again. Whereas Kindle went up and audio went up, but it just, basically what the data showed was that more people were interacting with literature, not less people were reading physical books. So people who, say, would never have read a book, but they love to listen to things in the car. You know, same with podcasts. You would have audiobooks becoming popular, and same with kids.
Well, Martin Beans Ward, the comedian and the theatre maker and entertainer, he was here yesterday for our bookshelf, you know, picking his favourite book. And he says he never reads and he never would have read. It's all Audible. And if that didn't exist, the alternative wouldn't be that he would sit down and read these books. He just wouldn't consume them at all. They wouldn't exist for him.
Exactly. And it's the same with physical books, especially with kids and their screens. And if you look at the rise of Tonys, you know, the cube that you put the sticker on top and it reads a story. You know, you're finding new and innovative ways to introduce stories to kids, because at the end of the day, it's the story and the pleasure of, you know, using your imagination that's important. And yes, the literary skills are important, but there are plenty of young people who read when they're young and then they never read for pleasure again because they just don't have the time, or it just was never seen as an enjoyable thing for them. And that's what we need to encourage, is the joy of it, not the tedium of having to slog through a longer book. And maybe they'll get to the longer books. Maybe there'll be kids that they pick up, you know, your Alex Riders, and that's all they want to read because they can't get enough of that long form. Mm. But we have to cater for those kids that are coming in and, you know, just want to start off with something a bit more gentle.
Derek Landy is with us as well, the author, of course, of the Skullduggery Pleasant series, amongst other things. Derek, you're welcome to the show. If you were starting off from scratch today now, would you make, you know, your books 50 pages shorter to grab the attention span of these kids?
Not really. I mean, there is always, and there always has been, a push from publishers to write shorter books, but that's purely from a printing point of view.
Okay.
It costs them more to print a bigger book, and yet they can't really add that to the price because books are certain prices, so they would be encouraging to write shorter books. But yeah, that's got nothing to do with the attention span of the younger reader. And while I read the article that in which Anthony was saying all this stuff, and he does make very good points. I don't know if I agree with them, though. I think absolutely there will always be especially the younger readers who will need something visually appealing to make them open the book in the first case. But you know, there will always be those readers out there who are fully prepared for a longer regular size book, or even a longer book.
Have you, or would you, adapt your writing to cater for kind of the whims of children today? Or how would I word that? Are you conscious of what's kind of in the zeitgeist? You know what I mean? And what was in it maybe when you started the Skullduggery Pleasant series would be different today, where it's kind of Fortnite or TikTok or things like this. Do they inform like either story selection or styles of writing?
That's a slippery slope to go down. And when you write a book, you don't know how long it's going to take you to write the thing. You don't know how long it's going to take you to edit the thing. Then it'll be published when the market is right. So it might be 2 years after, 2 or even 3 years after you've started. So the zeitgeist is the zeitgeist. It's the moment. So if you are writing for what you think the moment is, by the time it comes out, the moment is gone. And if you try to, if you don't respect your audience, the reader will know this. Mm. They will spot it. And kids, young readers are wonderful because they will give you the chance. They will open a book and they will be fully prepared to go along with whatever story or madcap adventure or whatever you want to take them on, so long as you treat them as equals. So if you suddenly start to doubt your audience's intelligence, or if you suddenly start to doubt your audience's attention span, the resulting book will, I think, be quite painfully obvious. So you've just got to, I mean, essentially you have to blunder on regardless. You've just got to write whatever book it is you're writing. And there is no guarantee it will ever find the right audience. But as far as art goes, you have to stay true to your art without sounding too pretentious. And once you stay true to that, you have a chance to stay true to the reader.
Yeah. Lorraine, much like any other art form, though, there's an element of evolution, isn't there, with writing? Or maybe evolution, it's just change, isn't that? There's, you know, the writing at any moment reflects kind of society. It's a product of its environment. And you read a kid's book that was written in the middle of the 19th century, and it's probably going to look or feel very different to a kid's book written today.
Yeah, art imitates life at the end of the day. And I think kids' books are in this unique space where we are so affected, if you're a reader growing up, by the things that you read. And so whenever you come to the next generation, you're saying, well, you know what? Anne of Green Gables is the thing to read. And it's a beautiful book and it's wonderful. But it is fantasy. It's science fiction to a child reading it today. Because what do you mean you just get to leave the house and then you'll come back in 2 days to your mother? You come back in time for tea and it's fine. And so I think at the end of the day, as artful as it is still a business. And I think it's interesting hearing Derek speak about it, because at the end of the day, it's my job as part of the publishing team to worry about the market and making sure that it's in the right place at the right time. And all he needs to worry about is, not all, it's a huge thing, but he needs to worry about the work and the art, and that's wonderful. And then we will make sure that it goes in at the right place at the right time. And to expect artists to cater to that, as he says, is a recipe for disaster.
How often do you read a manuscript and you think, that is absolutely brilliant, I love it, but it's just not hot right now?
Oh, so often.
Oh,
so often.
That's awful.
And I know it's even more difficult for agents, who are the ones who are getting a lot of their submissions in, and some of the, you know, incredible writers. But I think that is, as I say, it's a business. And that's the awful part of it, is that we're selling books. And we want to be giving kids the best of everything, and we want to speak to them and meet them at their level. And that means not just picking a book that we love, because we're adults. We're going to have the lens of what we loved when we were kids and what we think is great. But that's not who we're publishing for. We need to publish for the kids who are going to be reading them.
With established authors, there's a degree to which, I mean, they can set their own agenda, I guess, because they've got a name. But how true is that, say, for the kids market? Because, you know, I'll say Robert Harris could write a book about anything, and there's a certain amount of adult readers who will just say, oh, there's a new Robert Harris book, I'll pick that up and I'll read it. But say for someone like Derek, he has an audience, he is a kind of fans who will buy his book. But with kids authors, you're reliant on new people all the time to come into it.
Yeah, I don't think we're ready for the graphic novel of Conclave just yet. but realistically, yeah, like, you're
sorry, the movie was almost like it was a shot for shot remake of the book. It was unbelievable.
That's so
how close
true.
It was.
He writes very cinematographically. Yeah, to film. But yeah, with children's books, yeah, the market is always moving. And I think, you know, people, authors reach icon status in a children's market in a way they possibly don't, because they become sort of, you know, such a figure, a mythical figure in a child's life, this author. And how did they do this? How did they make this world that's now teleported into my head? Whereas with adults, we sort of get how it works. Sure, we might not do it ourselves, but we get how it works. In the same way, I'm not a doctor, but I kind of figure out how that works, you know? But with kids, no, they're magical. That's it. They've created magic.
Derek, it must be nice, is it, to occupy that space in the minds of so many children as the architect of that world?
Yeah, it's, you know, when you write, you are at your desk, you have your screen in front of you, you have your cats around you, you know, all, and you spend months here. And then to go out and when you're actually have a book published and to go on tour, then to see, you're reminded kind of the impact that books have, especially on young people. When you start to see the same faces year after year and they're slowly growing up, and the impact that books have on their lives, it's staggering. The amount of people I've met where they've said, you know, before Skullduggery, before Alex Rider, before whatever, I hadn't read a book. And then But there are books out there that just are waiting for that particular reader, that reluctant reader, to pick them up. And it might be Dog Man, it might be A Diary of a Wimpy Kid, whatever it is, there are kids out there who have not yet had their eyes open to what is possible. And all it takes is, and you might try Skullduggery, it might not work. You might try Alex Rider, it might not work. And then you will try like Geek Girl, or, and that will hit, and that will resonate. And suddenly you've got this reluctant reader who is now a lifelong reader.
Listen, Derek, thanks a million for joining us. Derek Landy is the author of the Skullduggery Pleasant series. Lorraine Leavis is the author of Once Upon a Reader, Raising Your Children with a Love of Books, and head of sales for Bloomsbury in Ireland.
The Hard Shoulder with Kieran Cuddihy.
With the MG Hybrid and Electric range.
Weekdays from 4 on News Talk.